What would you sacrifice for eternal youth? In 1890, when Victorian London prized respectability above all else, Oscar Wilde dared to ask this dangerous question. His novel sparked immediate scandal. Critics called it poisonous, prosecutors later wielded it as evidence against him in court, and polite society recoiled in horror. Yet beneath the controversy lay something far more unsettling, a mirror held up to an entire civilization's hypocrisy. We live in an age of filters and cosmetic procedures where youth culture reigns supreme, and image crafting has become an art form. Wilde's only novel speaks to us now more urgently than ever, exposing the rot beneath beautiful surfaces and asking whether we, too, are hiding portraits in our attics. In Basil Hallward's sunlit studio, an artist completes his masterpiece, a portrait of Dorian Gray, whose finely curved scarlet lips, frank blue eyes, and crisp gold hair embody perfect innocence. Lord Henry Wotton observes, dispensing seductive philosophies, "The only way to get rid of a temptation is to yield to it." He warns that youth fades quickly, that beauty alone matters, that conventional morality stifles authentic living. These words awaken something dangerous in Dorian. Gazing at his portrait, he experiences a devastating epiphany. This image will remain forever young while he must age and decay. In passionate desperation, he cries, "If it were I who was to be always young and the picture that was to grow old, I would give my soul for that." Through unexplained supernatural means, this impulsive wish becomes reality. The painting will age and bear the marks of sin, while Dorian remains perpetually youthful, a Faustian bargain transforming his life into an experiment in consequence-free corruption. Dorian's moral education begins with Sybil Vane, a gifted actress performing Shakespeare in a dingy East End theater. He becomes obsessed with her extraordinary talent for transformation, loving her performances rather than the earnest girl behind them. When genuine love destroys her ability to act, he turns cruel. "You have killed my art. Without your art, you are nothing." His words drive Sybil to suicide by poison. The next morning, Dorian discovers his portrait now bears a subtle curl of cruelty around the painted mouth, the supernatural mechanism governing his life. When Lord Henry brings news of Sybil's death, Dorian's horror transforms into aesthetic detachment. "It seems to me to be simply like a wonderful ending to a wonderful play," he declares, reducing real suffering to theatrical entertainment. This establishes the pattern defining his descent, experiencing life as pure sensation, divorced from moral consequence. Protected by unchanging beauty, Dorian frequents opium dens and gambling houses while maintaining his respectable position. Young men of good family fall into his orbit and emerge ruined, though none can say exactly how. A turning point arrives when Lord Henry gives Dorian a Yellow Book, a French novel chronicling a Parisian's pursuit of ever more exotic sensations. Though Wilde never names it, the book closely resembles Joris Carl Huysmans' Against Nature, a manifesto of aesthetic decadence. This poisonous volume becomes Dorian's Bible, inspiring increasingly perverse experiments. He orders multiple copies bound in different colors to match his moods. The book's protagonist becomes a prefiguring type of himself, containing Dorian's future before he lives it. For years, Dorian pursues obsessive aesthetic collections, jewels, mysterious musical instruments, exotic perfumes, ecclesiastical vestments transformed into curiosities. Yet these bring no lasting satisfaction. Each acquisition provides temporary distraction from mounting spiritual emptiness, requiring increasingly extreme experiences to feel anything. Like modern influencers chasing the next viral moment, Dorian's addiction to new sensations mirrors our compulsive consumption, though his collections were physical rather than digital. Hidden in his old schoolroom, the portrait undergoes grotesque transformations, charting Dorian's moral decay. Each sin manifests visibly. The mouth hardens into a cruel sneer. Eyes gleam with cunning. Hands appear bloodstained. The painting becomes the most magical of mirrors, showing him the degradation of his own soul. Dorian compulsively checks it after each transgression, simultaneously fascinated and repelled. The portrait serves multiple symbolic functions. It represents the conscience Dorian attempts to ignore, the part recognizing right from wrong. Its placement in the schoolroom, where he received childhood education, emphasizes this role as moral teacher. The room once belonged to his grandfather, suggesting his vices may be inherited, a Victorian anxiety about hereditary degeneration. But the portrait also represents art's destruction by life. According to Wilde's aesthetic philosophy, art should exist separate from morality, serving as a veil rather than a mirror. By forcing the portrait to reflect his sins, Dorian perverts its artistic purpose. What could have been one of the greatest things in modern art becomes a horrifying moral ledger, exactly what Wilde believed should never happen to genuine art. As bodies accumulate, Dorian's double life crumbles. He murders Basil in rage after revealing the corrupted portrait, then blackmails Alan Campbell into disposing of the body. When James Vane, Sybil's brother, sworn to revenge, appears outside his window, paranoia consumes him. In a brief moment of self-awareness, Dorian attempts redemption by sparing a country girl from seduction. But checking the portrait, he finds a look of cunning and lines of cruelty round the mouth more pronounced. His supposed good deed sprang not from genuine compassion, but from vanity, the desire for a new sensation. True redemption requires authentic moral transformation, not performative gestures. In desperation, Dorian decides to destroy the evidence. As it had killed the painter, so it would kill the painter's work, he reasons, stabbing the canvas with the knife he used to murder Basil. The supernatural exchange reverses instantly. The portrait returns to its original beauty while Dorian's body transforms into a hideous corpse bearing all the marks of his sins. His servants find him so withered and grotesque, they can only identify him by his rings. The attempt to separate appearance from reality proves impossible. Wilde's masterpiece speaks across more than a century with eerie prescience. When prosecutors quoted passages describing Basil's feelings for Dorian as evidence of Wilde's perverted tendencies, arts and life collapsed into each other in exactly the way he'd warned against. He who insisted art should never be confused with autobiography became its most famous victim. The novel's relevance extends far beyond biography. We live in an age of curated Instagram feeds and Snapchat filters, where everyone maintains a public image divorced from private reality. We pursue youth through cosmetic procedures as if aging were a moral failing. We consume experiences not for their value, but for social media potential, treating life as aesthetic performance, just as Dorian did. Wilde's supernatural conceit brilliantly literalizes what we instinctively know. The division between appearance and reality cannot be maintained indefinitely. In a world that sells eternal youth and packages authenticity as a brand, we've forgotten the most dangerous bargain, sacrificing substance for surface, soul for selfie. Your life isn't a curated feed. It's the sum of your choices, visible or hidden. The portrait hangs in every heart, recording what we do when no one's watching.